Good evening. Welcome to the second podcast from this motley crew. Three fairly well-established Celtic bloggers. All got plenty to talk about. There's been two matches against Aberdeen and Hibs since our first episode. Thanks to everyone that looked in. We've had, I think, 1,800 views and 150 subscribers and 10 comments. So that's decent going from a standing start. So this will be a weekly podcast, and all sort of contributions, feedback is very, very welcome. We've all got different, we've got fairly similar opinions, but we're not three monkeys at all nodding sync. There's a little bit of divergence here and there, and that's why we've all got three different blogs. They're all very independent. Eric's got Read Celtic, myself, Joe McHugh, I've got Video Celts, and James Forrest has got the Celtic blog. So we'll get the action underway around the flannel. So yesterday it was 3-0 to Celtic, a bit of a mixed bag. I don't know the last time that the Celtic goalkeeper was man of the match in a home game. Someone suggested that Fraser Foster in the 2019 League Cup final was the last time a Celtic goalkeeper was man of the match. I don't know anyone that keeps those stats, but I'd be hard to dispute that performance against our old friend Alfredo. Schmeichel was outstanding yesterday from the first couple of minutes right through to the end. Defending was slack, but as the manager said, the defence has been sound over the course of the season. 12 clean sheets out of 15, so they're perhaps allowed an off day. Hopefully it's not on Tuesday, hopefully it's not next Sunday. So it was 3-0 overall, one moment of absolute class from Kyogo. The rest of it was fairly okay-ish. It was in the 6, 7 out of 10 category rather than the 8s and 9s that we've been used to. So I'll pass over to Eric for your takeaway thoughts from Saturday's 3-0 victory over Hibs.
Well, hello everybody and welcome back to the pod. For me, we lived dangerously in that game, very much so. Hibs had a lot of chances. They were very wasteful. And look, I think, you know, on another day, we might have been caught napping in those situations. Only for Schmeichel, I think. Obviously, he won the man of the match, and I think he won the man of the match fair and square. You know, he definitely deserved his credit. He stopped everything that came his way, which is why he had a clean sheet. I thought we were a bit lax in defence. Now, would that be the first time we've had the partnership of Scales and Trusty together?
No, not the first time.
They played at Atalanta and a couple of others, so they're not strangers.
So that would be the first league game we've had them as a partnership, I would say, would it? Unless there were substitutions made where they were together.
No, Carter Vickers missed a few games about 4 or 5 weeks ago. So they've played. Yeah. They're both left sided, but they have played together. So it wasn't brand new on them.
I don't know. Maybe it's just, I suppose, I'm looking at it from the perspective that they were maybe just a bit out of touch with each other. It looked as if they were. There was a few mistakes made in the defence, and they were caught out on a couple of occasions, especially those balls over the top from Hibs, you know, that especially the one in the first, literally the first few minutes that Schmeichel saved from the Hibs striker. I thought, you know, it was, they just looked a little bit rusty. And I felt Engels took his chance well. Obviously, he got his goal. In terms of his possible, red card for foul play, I think that was his momentum. You know, his momentum just brought him onto was it Joe Newell that he came down on? Was it Newell? Yeah. But like, why they were even reviewing that for a red card, I have no idea. I think it was borderline yellow, rather than red. But in terms of our own play, we had plenty of chances. We just didn't, had McCowan put away that second chance that we had in quick succession from the first goal, it could have been a totally different outcome in the game. You know, he rattled the crossbar with that. And I think then, you know, it was really, if we kept plugging away, it was really only going to be a matter of time before we got that second. And obviously we did through the own goal from Newell as well. And look, it was kind of plain sailing after that. When Kyogo came on, that was like, I mean, that was fantastic finishing from him, I thought. Lovely dink over the keeper. And to be fair to Gordon Smith, he had a good game, you know, in the goal for in goal for Hibs. He actually, he put in a good performance as well. But I suppose the difference is we put away our chances, they didn't put away theirs, and that's why we had, you know, three goals and they had none. That's pretty much the way I see it.
I think the one of the big issues is there's no way the players went into that match without being aware of Dinamo Zagreb in the cup final. So it's human nature that's in their minds. And we all remember a fantastic 6-0 win at St Johnstone. We went to Dortmund rubbing our hands, what are we going to do? So you can't keep it's unlikely to keep those standards up, keep hitting the highs. So an average performance before two big matches, we still get 16, 17 good squad players to call on for those games. So we're in good shape. We did what was necessary, but I'll pass over to James for some words of wisdom.
Yesterday, the game, I thought that we had done better defensively than we actually did. I was convinced that it was the manager had instructed us to play a high line and try and use the offside trap to hoodwink Hibs. And I thought that the first couple of chances that they had, in which Schmeichel saved and done very well with, I thought that they were offside. And then I watched it last night on TV and I understood why Rodgers was raging, because it certainly was not a strategy. So I don't know why we looked so bad yesterday and why we got caught so many times in that long ball. We've dealt with them well most of the season, but that could have been a travesty yesterday. Could have been an absolute travesty. We can't play all that against Zagreb.
Well, when we were 2-0 up, one of the guys at my CSE said to me, he said, we're actually lucky we're not 3-2 down at this point. You know, and that was just after Schmeichel had pulled off another great save, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, it wasn't as if they were caught cold. I mean, middle of the second half, Luke McCowan very deliberately putting that pass back through. The Hibs player was onto it, but thankfully so was Schmeichel. And I mean, they did various one-on-ones, and then the cutback for Newell in the first half, that was a sitter. He hits the target, he's got an 80% chance of scoring. When you're 1-1 with Schmeichel, you maybe only get a 25-30% chance of scoring because he's such a good goalkeeper. But that wasn't far off an open goal for Newell, and Hibs had various. Perhaps Celtic would have responded and played differently, but there's a slackness all through the match. But again, it's 3 points, clean sheet, and all that keeps things going. And if we try anything like that against Zagreb, it'll be brutal. But I think Atalanta will be more in mind than Dortmund when we head into Tuesday's match. They're not in the best of shape, but it's Champions League. They've got 7 points. They've got 1 point less than us. We think we're doing fantastic this season in the Champions League. Zagreb have got 1 point less. So it's a very level game. And they'll be looking on Celtic the exact same way as Celtic are looking on Dynamo Zagreb. This is a decent chance for points. So perhaps that wraps up the review of Saturday's game against Hibs and touching on to the Zagreb game. One subject that was brought up, a few sort of issues recently, is youth development. Without blowing my trumpet, I asked our esteemed CEO, the last player from the academy to start a competitive match, the first team, didn't have a clue. Passed it to Brendan Rodgers. The answer, of course, was Owen Moffat. It's almost 21, almost 3 years since Owen Moffat started. Since then, there's been nobody coming through from the academy to start matches. Bizarrely, we did see Ross Doohan in midweek. He did a pretty fair game. For somebody coming in from the cold, they went on at half-time at Tynecastle, in at the start against Celtic, a couple of good saves in the second half. But these guys are 26 and they're starting to get through. One of the main issues is just there doesn't seem to be any plan beyond being involved in the academy. Once they turn full-time professional, they could maybe get 20, 25 games at some level, and then they should be playing in the Scottish Championship. They should be at Partick Thistle or Queen's Park when they're 17, because the Lowland League, playing mostly on plastic pitches, and half the pitches in the Championship are now plastic, but playing in the Lowland League is tried and tested. It's not developing players. One of the issues is we hang on to players because we want to put up a good show in the UEFA Youth League. That's understandable, but the main purpose is to produce first-team players, and that's came to a grinding halt. I used to watch the youths quite regularly. 2015, I watched a lot of the under-17s. That had Stephen Welsh, Jack Aitchison, Ewan Henderson, Robbie Dees, Daniel Church, a lot of good Kerr McEnroy, a lot of good prospects, but nothing really happened. Stephen Welsh is there or thereabouts, but he's fourth choice central defender. Him and Rawlson are basically there for the UEFA box ticking. So it has ground to a halt. I don't see any way that it's going to get any better. Daniel Cummings at the minute is in that classic situation. He's progressing well, but he doesn't really see any pathway. Ben Doak, Kelly and Vatt have been in the same situation. So it's very, there's no easy solution, but I'll pass over to Eric for your thoughts on, from your part of the world, 20, 25 years ago, Colin Healy and Liam Miller came through from different directions, different sources. But now and then you get Kelly and Sheridan or somebody popping up, but it's largely dried up. So
you can even go back to, you're talking about those two guys, Irish players, but even that time you had Aidan McGeady coming through, you had Jamie Smith, if you remember, came in as well. And although he was great, he raced up and down the wing, he wasn't able to cross the ball, which ultimately cost him in the long term, But I don't know, I suppose it stood out to me on Wednesday night when we were playing Aberdeen. When I heard Ross Doohan's name, mentioned as the goalkeeper starting for Aberdeen, I was talking to the guys at the club and saying, at first I knew Doohan was playing, but then as I watched the game and the game progressed, he had an excellent game and he pulled off some excellent saves. And I kind of just got, to the guy saying, if this guy looks like, he actually looks pretty good. He should have got an opportunity at Celtic when he was there. And Connor Hazard as well. Both guys, when Connor Hazard was given his chance, I know it wasn't the best time to get a chance during that COVID season. But he did. I suppose ultimately he did help us out massively in the cup final in 2020, that rescheduled cup final. And I suppose it just made me think that, James made a point there when we were chatting on our group chat, where he said that Ronnie Dyla spotted the talent the minute he went in. And he picked out some, if you remember the hammering of Motherwell at the end of his final season, was it 7-0 we beat Motherwell? He had so many of the youth players out in that game to give them a go, and they all produced in that game. But since Ronnie, which is really 2016,
There's a slight pause there, Eric. You're just saying since Ronnie in 2016.
Yeah, I was saying since Ronnie in 2016, we haven't seen any real development. We've seen Stephen Welsh come on, and we've seen
Anthony Mickey Valston. Johnson, and there's been a few guys there or thereabouts, but nobody nailing it down like McGregor.
There's a story in there of his own, really, like Mickey Johnson. But for somebody who is so adept at developing players, I can't understand, even in his two stints, how Rodgers is not focused on youth development. And
there's no one there. He can't move up from 16, 17. One season at Rocco Vatta, three seasons in the Lowland League. They've got to be thrown in. And most of them will sink, a few of them will swim in the Scottish Championship. If they go to Partick Thistle, and then the next season they're at St Mirren or Motherwell, we'll find out if there's a player. But banging in goals in the Lowland League, playing in plastic against failed professionals, it's not going to produce first-team ready players. But over to you, James, for your thoughts.
Can I just make one point there I won't be long, James.
Yeah,
there's also, Rodgers is ultimately, he's the manager, okay? Shouldn't he be the guy making the decisions, like you said, Joe, that these players should be going out to the likes of Partick Thistle and Queen's Park and, to get proper development? As the manager, if he wants youth development to happen at the club, should he not be saying, this, and this guy. I need him out here. I need him out here, and I need him out here. You know what I mean? So that's, I'm just saying that it should be part of his remit, should it not? I mean, Steve McManus should be reporting to him and making these recommendations, and then he's agreeing with it and deciding.
We've got quite a few players playing their third season in the UEFA Youth League. They're doing very well this season, but I would suggest one season at that level, they get a taste for it, and then it's out to sink or swim rather than looking for progress in the UEFA the Youth League. But James has been waiting patiently. The stage is yours.
Well, I've written about this and banged my head against the wall on this for a few years now. I mean, you both have a lot of good points on this. I agree with Joe, though, that the talent isn't there. If it was there, it would be in the team. Aidan McGeady's interview recently, where he knocked in the head this whole idea of the pathway. The pathway is, if you're good enough, you'll be in the team. That's it. That's the pathway. If you're good enough and you show enough talent, then the manager can't ignore you. But we're hamstrung by a system which does not support youth development at all in Scotland. And the press is very reluctant to discuss the roots of this problem, and I understand why they're very reluctant to discuss the roots of this problem, because like a lot of Scottish football problems, the roots are in Ibrox and in Hampden. And when the Nuco decided it wasn't going to field the team in the reserve league, which I thought every team had to do by mandate, no one batted an eyelid, but that was the downward spiral for the youth league. The reserve league was gone within a few years, and now we're trying this lowland league experiment, which is nonsensical. And I said from the start it was nonsensical. You're not going to develop footballers playing, as Joe says, on plastic pitches against ex-pros. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And that's, and part of the problem stems from a Scottish cultural issue with the coaching system in this country. It's terrible. It focuses on the wrong things. It doesn't articulate like proper skill. It doesn't. What we need are some proper, really good foreign coaches at Celtic and a foreign coaching culture. And that's the only way we're ever going to get better as a club. But Scottish football itself needs a good shake in this regard, because the job's not getting done at the SFA either. I think Henry McQueen published his report on how to rebuild grassroots football in Scotland. I don't know how many years ago now, 10 years ago now. None's ever been done about it. It's rotten on a shelf somewhere. And this problem isn't just limited to us. It's every club in the country has the same issue. You look around the best young players in the country. I mean, this is a great Ibrox strategy. The great Ibrox strategy, you know, is to sign the best domestic Scottish talent. You know, I thought that we had tried to do that in the last couple of years, only there isn't enough of it to build a team out of. But, I mean, every now and again, we'll go and we'll sign a really good Scottish player, like McGowan, maybe like Miller coming up, the Stuart Armstrongs, the Ryan Christies. Traditionally, we went and signed the best Scottish talent, but there's just not enough of it out there any longer. And the failure's not just at Celtic, it's right across the game, right across Scottish football. And the roots of it are in the fact that we have no reserve league, and nothing was ever put in place to replace it.
The reserve league disappeared. The reserve league done away with about 2008. Around about 2010.
Oh, yeah. It was Rangers who pulled out at first. They were the first club to say, we don't want to put a team in the reserve league. It's a money-saving exercise, and then the whole thing collapsed.
They brought in...
I thought it was post-2012, but you're right, it was before that.
No.
It was when Rangers were trying to suck collapse.
Yeah, and then they brought in the Youth Development League, the Under-19 League, the Development League, various things. But there's been no reserve league since 2008. We started the St. Ninian's project 2010. It has manifestly failed. There's no appetite.
And there's another problem, Joe, mate, and you've talked about this as well, and I've talked about this. It's that the entire youth development section of the club is staffed by the friends of the man. They're all ex-players. And, you know, I marvelled at some of the commentary when the two suggested names for our youth development job were Charlie McGrew and Johnny Hayes. Right, Johnny Hayes ended up getting an assistant coaching job rather than the big job. And I was complaining at the time, and the response I got from a lot of our fans was, We complaining about they're good guys, they're good pros, they've been good servants to the club. I don't give a shit if they've been good servants to the club. Are they qualified to do that particular job? It's all I cared about. And we interviewed Charlie McGrew for that job when he's getting no coaching experience at all. That's just the stupid level that we operate at.
Did Johnny Hayes even have coaching experience? That's the thing. I mean, he came directly from Aberdeen, didn't he?
Well, Johnny Hayes had his coaching badges anyway. He'd already passed. But Charlie McGrew is in the process of still sitting his and got an interview for a massive job.
Hayes had minimal experience at Aberdeen. I think he might have been working with their development squad or whatever they call it last season. But there's a few elements. The players, the raw material isn't there. The players aren't there. St Ninian's isn't attractive to go to. Lennon Miller, his dad's a former pro. He was inside the Celtic Academy at one stage and he decided that Motherwell was a better option for him. Getting bussed off to Lennox Town, training in the morning, going to school, training in the afternoon, and there's no recent examples of players that have benefited from that system. McGregor and Tierney are the exceptions rather than the norm. So I've no idea what the solution is. Scottish football's not going to change. Celtic have got to change. So they could do with thinking outside the box. They've got to do something to develop
players. Adrian Ashgard has been an appointment. And I think that our new head of football development or whatever Paul Tisdale's job is going to be called, I think he's got a big job in front of him. And I think he's just got to gut the whole place. He's got to do a root and branch and just get rid of almost everybody who's in there and bring in a bunch of new people. Asgard's a good start. Asgard's an outstanding appointment. His pedigree's first rate. So more of the same. And we'll be in a better place.
It's like going back to Joe's point there, you know, that Lennon Miller was at Celtic and then he just chose to go to Motherwell. I mean, ultimately, any young guy who is starting out at a club like Celtic has aspirations to make it to the first team. But when the realization hits you that there is no pathway, because it's clearly evident over the last few years that there has been no pathway, then ultimately you want to move on. You want to play first team football. And that just goes back to what Joe said about Lennon Miller. Lennon Miller was at Celtic.
But no, if you're talented, you won't ignore you.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same. You made the point last week about Rocco Vatta, Joe, you know, that he's right. He might only be on the fringes of the Watford side and he's coming on as a substitution. But hey, he's playing in the Championship. He's playing with Championship-level players. He's training with Championship-level players. That's a hell of a lot better than what he was doing prior to going to Watford.
Yeah, but Rocco Vatta has more talent than he hasn't. And that's where his future's going to be decided. He's either as good as he thinks he is or he's not. I think he's in for a shock, to be honest. I think a lot of them are.
Part of the reason they're in for a shock is their career stalled for 3 years. While Lennon Miller's been racking up 50 to 100 SPFL appearances, Rocco Vatta has been playing in the UEFA Youth League and the Lowland League. I think he got 2 substitute appearances perhaps last season. He came on and scored against Bucky, and I think his only league minutes was about 3, 4, 5 minutes at Aberdeen in February. So we could be here for an awful long time on it, but hopefully similar discussions have been held by Michael Nicholson. He's finding out what's going wrong because we apparently aspire to be world-class in everything we do.
Well, the thing is, I don't want Michael Nicholson near this process. Michael Nicholson shouldn't be within 100 miles in that process. That should be up to Tisdale and all his guys and Rogers and the assist and the youth.
Can I just ask James?
We should have the bean counters anywhere near this.
James, just a question for you. You were at the fan media introduction of Ange Postecoglou, weren't you?
Yeah.
And was it you that put the question to Ange Postecoglou about youth development?
Yes.
So Ange gave a really good answer that time to that question.
He did.
And it stood out to me. And then at that time, Don McKay was in the position that Michael Nicholson is now in. Right.
Yes.
So would you have felt at that time, had Don McKay remained in place to work with Ange, then maybe now we would be in a better position in terms of youth development?
I think that Don McKay had a lot of ideas that were a bit too revolutionary and he wanted to change too much. Ironically, we are 3 years down the line and a lot of the things that he certainly had in mind are now coming to pass. But we wasted a lot of time getting here. Wasted a lot of time.
Yeah. But my point being, Ange Postecoglou gave a very, you know, he had very, you know, he gave a very good answer in terms of what he wanted to do with youth development, but it never really materialized. And it, I feel it didn't materialize because he just kind of looked at it and he came up against the same stumbling blocks that we're seeing right now. And it was something that was put on the back burner, you know, and because I'm sure he looked at the structure within the game and said, this is just a non-runner. It won't work. You know?
We need a full revolution in terms of how we coach players. And that has to come from a foreign continental coaching system.
Well, one area the club has done something on is they've got two players out at Admiral Wacker in the Austrian second division. So that is a little chink of light. Maybe Paul Tisdale will explore
Johnny
that Kenny's further.
A chink of light as well.
I don't think
he's coming back to be looked at. Because he's went out and got first team experience. A club he's played in Europe, he's scored goals in Europe, and I can't say I'm terribly surprised that he's coming back. I don't know what that means for Daniel Cummings, however, I don't, because Rodgers does need us to have a third striker, and he wants that striker to come from the youth team or the youth players. And if he's decided to bring back John Kennedy, he's either doesn't believe that Daniel Cummings is good enough, or he doesn't believe that Daniel Cummings will sign a new deal. If Daniel Cummings does sign a new deal, we should send Daniel Cummings on loan immediately to one of the clubs you suggested, mate, for that very reason. Get him the first team experience that's benefited Kenny enough that he can come back.
Well, it's chicken and egg. I don't think Cummings will sign a contract because he knows that players don't tend to develop at Celtic. And I suspect Kenny's coming back as plan Z. If Kyogo's injured, Ida will play. If Kyogo and Ida are injured, Deason Maeda will play. And then a real push would come to Johnny Kenny. And if he's not played any football for a month, if he's not played football for 6 weeks, he's going to be a bit raw and out of sync. He'll be informed just now. If he gets some minutes at Celtic just now, he might be able to make an impact. But 5, 6, 7 weeks.
By the time we leave Ibrox, we could have this league just about won. And if we're not at least blooding some of the youth players after that point, I'll be very surprised.
Who do you suggest we blood? James, there's no one there.
Bring Kenny back straight. Bring Kenny back and give him some games right away. After the league's won. After we've come out of Ibrox and cemented this lead.
A little difference of opinion there. So
that's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Healthy difference.
It's not club media after all. So Tuesday, I was going to say Tuesday night, but Tuesday early evening, quarter to six, we're in Zagreb. 8 points from 5 matches. It's sort of unknown territory. We all seem to think that we've got Young Boys of Bern as a banker. We've got 3 points in our pocket in January. Us three are wise enough to know that that's not quite the case. A lot can happen between now and 22nd of January when Young Boys turn up. They'll be fresh from a winter break, or they'll be rusty from a winter break. But the immediate prospect is Dinamo Zagreb. They seem to be in a bit of a downer domestically. Their last Champions League game was a 3-0 home defeat from Dortmund. Dortmund looked miles ahead of them. A familiar picture for us three. But it's a huge game. I think all three of us would take a point right now, but it's also a game that there should be realistic prospects that we can win. If we play like we did against Leipzig, if we play like we did away to Atalanta, we should be in with a chance of winning. Whether we can do that, or whether we have an off night like Bruges, or a real off night like Dortmund away, that's up to the manager to produce. So I'll throw it back to you, James, for your analysis, prospects, hopes, wishes for Tuesday night in Zagreb.
Just don't ask me for a correct score prediction after my Aberdeen one, selling us back then.
I think we'll all go for one each on Tuesday. But on the match itself, what do you think?
Well, first I wrote the day about the so-called crisis at Zagreb. We shouldn't be listening to a single word of that. We shouldn't be paying no attention to that at all. They've had a domestic form slump, but they're still going to be a very tough team to beat. Champions League home advantage is massive, of course. Everybody knows that you've got a really good prospect to winning your home games if you're on the same level as the other team. I don't know enough about them. I know whether they're at the same level as us, but everybody at the club will take it seriously, and they will put blood, sweat, and tears into getting a victory against us. And I'm a bit wary about it, I've got to admit. When I heard the draw, I thought it was a game that was winnable, and I thought that we should be looking to win it, but they've had some impressive results at home in this tournament, and they're not going to be easy. It's not going to be an easy game. I would take a narrow win rather than a draw, maybe, but I think it would be narrow. I think if we do win, it will be by the odd goal. I'm not predicting a 4-0 this time. No chance.
The thing about a draw is, at this stage of the competition, a draw keeps us ahead of them with two matches to go. So there's a useful point for us, and there's 2 points lost for them. So you're getting into that area. You're not just thinking about yourself and your points. If we're ahead of Dinamo Zagreb with two matches to go, one of them against Young Boys of Bern, we should be in a decent shout of finishing above them, unless they can win their two remaining matches. So there's lots of moving parts, as they like to say. But what's your thoughts? James seems a little bit concerned. Do you share that concern that there could be a on Tuesday?
I'd be honest with you, Joe. I know that Zagreb have to, you know, they're going to come out fighting in this game because they're on 7 points, we're on 8 points. So they win that game, that, you know, that gives them the platform to head into the next round or a playoff anyway, at least, you know what I mean? We win it, it gives us that platform as well, which is going to make it a competitive game. From my perspective, I think we need to approach it in a kind of a semi-pragmatic way, in that we need to defend like we did at Atalanta, but we need to pick them off on the break when the opportunities arise. But I don't think it's going to be a game where we can go totally gung-ho at it, you know? I don't think we're going to be able to go out there and attack these guys and not get picked off. They don't have 7 points from being, you know, they have 7 points because they played well as well. So, you know, we have to take them seriously. But I do feel we have it in us to be able to maybe sneak a 1-0. It's going to be close. Like, I mean, if I was to predict it, I'd say 1-1 or 1-0. But either way, they could win it 1-0 too, you know? I think it's going to be a hard-fought game. It's going to be a hard-fought game because they've got a lot to play for, as do we. But I just feel if we go out there and we concentrate and we defend like we did at Atalanta, and we utilize, we need the likes of Rio Hatate not to have an off day, you know? And I had that discussion again on Wednesday night when we were playing Aberdeen. It seemed to me, okay, I know the conditions were bad at Aberdeen, but it seemed to me like he was having a bit of an off game. But then he goes and he does what he did, you know? He goes and he scores a cracking goal, you know? Takes it down the way he did and then puts it away the way he did. And that's what Hatate can do for you. And that's why I believe, you know, when I looked at that on Wednesday night, it's why I believe Roger stuck with him against Bruges. He hoped that there was a moment like that in Hatate. And who knew, you know, that shot that he took that just went inches wide, if that had gone in, what kind of game he would have had like after that against Bruges, you know? But I think that's why Roger perseveres with him, because he does have that moment of magic in him. But this is not at home against Bruges. This is away against Zagreb. So if Hatate is off it and he's not performing, he has to make a decision when it comes to the substitutions in the 60th running up to the 70th minute. He has to make a call on it, because I don't think, if Hatate's having an off game, I don't think that magic moment's going to come in a game like that. So that'd be my concern. Maybe Hatate will score this all and he'll go out there and he'll play blinder. And he'll score that wonderful goal that Rodgers expects from him. Yeah. I don't know. But that's sort of the concerns I have. But on the overall scheme of things, I think it's a game we could sneak a win, but it's more than likely going to be a draw. And I think the point would suit us and then set us up well for Young Boys on the 22nd of January.
The big team issue is midfield. You mentioned Hatate there. I think we know the back four. It could be Taylor or Valley at left back. That's fairly straightforward. There's maybe a question between Ida and Kyogo, but we know both wingers. James, what midfield do you expect to see on Tuesday night?
Well, I thought
McGregor and two.
I thought Engels was excellent yesterday. So I wouldn't be surprised if he plays. For me, it would be McGregor, Engels, and Bernard. And Bernardo.
I would agree with that too.
I would leave Rio on the bench. Rio's a good impact sub. Rio's a good player. Yeah. Able to bring out, you need something. But you want midfield solidity, and that's who I would play. I'd play the three of them.
Yeah,
that's one of his favorite words. He loves physicality, so you get more of that from Engels and Hatate. And as we know, if you start on the bench, it's not a snub, there's a role for you to play. Are you going for similar midfield, Eric?
I would expect my preference would be what James said there, Bernardo, McGregor, and Engels, but I get the feeling it's going to be Engels, Hatate, and McGregor. I just get the feeling that's what we're going to start with. But, you know, I think if we do start with that midfield, then it has to be a case of Rodgers needs to take note if Hatate isn't performing. Ideally, with what James said there, if we start with Bernardo instead of Hatate, Bernardo's good. He's a good physical player. He's the kind of player that's suited to an environment like that at Zagreb, I think.
Absolutely. And
maybe Rodgers will be in that kind of mind frame as well. Just remains to be seen on Tuesday evening.
Right. Well, as we know, this isn't going out live on YouTube. This is Sunday evening. So cast your thoughts forward 7 days. And I suspect run about 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. Next Sunday, the man from the Crown Bar in Bells Hill will be a bit of a talking point. Whatever happens, this is his third Glasgow derby of the season. He was in charge for the 3-3 moral victory at Ibrox in April. He was in charge for our 3-0 victory in September. And bizarrely, Willie Collum, with the vast talent pool of the Lanarkshire Refereeing Association to call upon, has decided that John Beaton again is the man to take charge of the Glasgow derby. We all know his background from the Albion Rovers Scottish Cup tie in 2014. When he robbed the Coatbridge Giants of a victory at Ibrox. There's been umpteen charges since then. In this particular fixture, December 2018, the Alfredo Morelos masterclass where he booted lumps out of everyone and escaped without even a booking. After 5 or 6 days, Celtic reluctantly came up with a statement demanding accountability, transparency, and it was absolutely buried. No follow-up whatsoever. The game at Ibrox, the 3-3 draw, was a travesty. The foul count in that game was ridiculous. Thankfully, we had Nick Walsh on VAR because they had a goal where Dessers put the ball in the net, where Iwata had been sorted out earlier on in the move. But the guy, he has great inconsistencies in how he applies the laws of the game. So what's your thoughts, Eric? The match will take care of itself closer to time, but it seems ridiculous that John Beaton is again in charge of it. At best, he's conflicted. So you suspected that was going to the appointment last week. It was confirmed in midweek. What's your take on things at the SFA regarding refereeing matters and that appointment?
Yeah, I mean, I did a fairly extensive article on it today, and I've had a fair bit of reaction from it too. And a couple of comments actually were, you know, one person commented and said that, you know, if VAR had been in place in 2018, all of those decisions that Beaton let go would have been called back. However, VAR wasn't in place then, and they weren't called back. They couldn't be called back. So, you know, Alfredo Morelos got away with murder in that game. But I suppose the overriding thing for me was, or is, this, you know, new reform of refereeing that Willie Collum was supposed to be carrying out, you know, and changing the whole thing from top to bottom, you know, nothing has changed. In fact, if anything, it's got worse. It's got worse in that, as you've pointed out, Joe, three since the 3-all draw, he has had he's got the game that we played earlier on in the season at Celtic Park. He's now got this game. Now, this, I don't know whether it confirms that Colum is a nodding dog. He's being told who he should be selecting for certain games. And he's getting paid the big bucks now. He's the head of the refereeing, you know, so the Scottish referees. He's getting paid the big bucks now. So if he wants to keep his job, he's going to keep being a nodding dog. And he's going to keep playing or, you know, giving games like this game coming up on Sunday to the likes of John Beaton. We know there's more at stake in this game than just the League Cup. Yep. We know that the survival lie is going to be dead and buried after this game if we win. So there's a hell of a lot more at stake. And there has to be an element of panic over at Ibrox because of this. It renders it all impotent now. You know? And you got to ask yourself, why then is the likes of Beaton being selected for this game? I said Walsh would be an ideal. He's the best of a bad lot. He seems to be able to control these games well. Beaton can't. He just doesn't. He doesn't control them. He makes inexplicable decisions. And he just... Look, Brendan Rodgers said he's incompetent. You know, and that's Brendan Rodgers' professional opinion. I don't say he's incompetent. He's not incompetent. He's perfectly competent. He knows exactly what he's doing most of the time. So I don't have to say that because I'm just a blogger and I'm just on a podcast. I can say what I like. And what I'm saying is he does not... It's not unconscious bias. It's conscious bias. This guy knows exactly what he's doing. And he will be all out next Sunday to ensure somehow, if there's a way, he'll find a way.
If there's a way.
Next Sunday, if he find a way to send somebody off. I mean, I said in my blog today, why is it that why should I have to have palpitations every time the Ibrox side go into our box and one of our players goes near them? Why should I feel that way as a Celtic fan? If I had nothing to worry about in relation to John Beaton, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
this is going to be the thing. Like if the Ibrox side get into our box and any of our players go near them or any of them brush off them, you're just holding your breath. You know, is there going to be a penalty given? You know, it's no. Look, I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong. The track record just suggests otherwise.
Yeah, Eric, you're talking about penalties here. It brings me to another John Beaton masterclass. 2nd of January 2023 at Ibrox. Two incidents involving Carol Starfelt. He reached out to tackle Fashion Sakala. Fashion Sakala ran into him, fell over, gesture to the fans, job done. A couple of minutes later, Starfelt was a shot at goal at the other end. Connor Goldson raises both hands. Beaton sees it. Willie Colum, that was the first Glasgow derby, it was on VAR. Willie Colum was on VAR, he reviewed it and he agreed with his Lanarkshire colleague, John Beaton, that it was no penalty. So you don't need to look too far for the evidence, but I'm sure James has got a few thoughts on it. So I'll pass over to James for his thoughts on John Beaton, the SFA, all matters. I mean, one other aspect is, since 2016, every Glasgow derby has been refereed by a member of either the Lanarkshire Refereeing Association or the Glasgow Referee Association. It's just outrageous. We've seen an incident recently in England. A guy that claims to be a Notts County supporter has got a bit of a problem with Liverpool. So what's the chances that somebody from Bells Hill might have an issue with one of the Glasgow teams? Over to you, James.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of points that come out of that. I mean, I think the Goldson decision is one of the most atrocious I've ever seen watching football. There is no other game in the world where that's not a penalty and a red card for preventing a goal. It's just, it's preposterous to me that that was ever ruled as anything else. It's ludicrous. And the 3-each game, the Dessers foul, was such an obvious foul. I was the only person in the whole pub who did not freak out when they scored the goal. I was just calm as a cup of water. Everybody else is like slamming the table, and I'm like, I'm waiting for the VAR intervention because it was such an obvious foul. I thought, there's no way they can watch that and allow that to stand. That's ridiculous. And of course, you're right. And being without a second thought, just allowed play on. It was disgraceful, absolutely disgraceful. But one thing is really screwed up about this is that we're sitting here and we're having this conversation, and none of us has the slightest fear of being contradicted, far less challenged for any of the things that we're saying, right? And it's because this isn't even an open secret. This is just open. Everybody knows what BN is. Everybody knows. And there's no other association in Europe where he would be allowed to referee this game. It's just madness. It's absolute madness. We're not questioning officials' integrity here by saying that an Ibrox fan should not be refereeing a cup final involving that team. We're not questioning his integrity. I'm questioning the sanity of a Scottish Football Association that allows that to happen. It wouldn't be allowed anywhere else. I don't care if he has a perfect game. It's a scandal that he gets the game. He should never be near it.
Are you telling me, honestly, that it's not going to be on his conscience that if we win that game, we pull ahead of his favourite club in the Trophy Cup?
It's insane.
No, look, for starters, we're already ahead of them. We know that. I'm just for posterity, I'm saying we pull ahead of them because we bury the survival. Okay? We're ahead of them. We've been ahead of them for, you know, since the day that the old club died.
Yeah.
You know, we've pulled ahead. They've got three trophies. We know what we've got. So let's just put that to bed anyway for starters. Okay? But the point I'm making is their belief, which is completely bullcrap belief, that they're level with us on trophies, is going to be put to bed.
Yes. That's
what the whole thing is about. Are you telling me that going into that game that John Beaton is not going to have that in his conscience? He's not going to be thinking about that. He's not going to be thinking about what he can do to change that.
Apparently not. That's a perfectly logical, perfectly human question, and we're not even allowed to speculate on it and ask it. You won't get anyone in the mainstream media asking that question. None of them would even dare. None of them think it's beneath us to even question it. Who is questioning integrity? This is basic human nature. If you've got a favourite club and your favourite club is playing in a game of that consequence, that's just crazy to expect you to be impartial. It's crazy.
If I'm a Celtic supporter and I'm going out and I'm refereeing that game and I know that my team can bury the survival line, what's my conscience going to be telling me? What am I going to be thinking? I'm human and I'm going to think that's my favourite team. They can now put this to bed. They can bury all the bull and I can influence that. I'm the man in the middle and I can influence that. Does anybody out there who doesn't think that John Beaton does not have that in his mind is just not thinking straight?
Over the next 2 or 3 weeks, there'll be lots of social nights out. John Beaton, like most folk of his age, will be having a few nights out in and around the west of Scotland, possibly in Bells Hill, possibly in his favourite bar. So it is complete nonsense that he's in charge of that match. But the SFA culture just grooms guys from this part of the world to referee that match. We barely know a referee from Edinburgh, Dundee, Aberdeen, Perth. They don't get a look in. If you're born in Bells Hill or Wishaw, you're more likely to be a top referee in Scotland than if you're from the capital city or the oil capital in the north. So the whole culture is wrong. Willie Collins being brought in, he's just continuing that. He's been a product of that. Hugh Dallas took a shine to him, helped race him through the ranks. It certainly wasn't on ability, and he's just continuing that. So we all know what to expect. And one of my many pet hates, some guys come back to you and say, there's a famous Jock Stein quote that if we're good enough, the referee won't matter. I have no idea where that quote came from. If someone can get in touch with me and tell me what match Jock Stein said that after, I'll eat humble pie. I don't believe it. There's quite a few people that famous quotes are made up about. I'm not sure on Jock Stein's quote, or was it Willie Mailey, about the Celtic shirt doesn't shrink for inferior talents. Something along those lines. These phrases sound sort of marketing and PR. Again, if there's a source of it, if somebody can come up with it, I'll take the humble pie. But John Beaton will have a big impact in the match. He shouldn't be in charge. Someone from a different environment should be in charge. If that's from the east of Scotland or wherever, But there's no saying what the person from Easter Scotland is.
England would be my preference.
Yeah. Or Mars.
And I would I'd make the point that if, you know, for any of our viewers who are unfamiliar, we'd say, the history of this and think that we're a bunch of paranoid freaks, just watch John Larkin's documentary, Anybody But Celtic, and you'll see exactly where this comes from. That's what I would say. And that's freely available on YouTube. So educate yourself if you want to know what we're talking about, if you aren't aware of what we're talking about.
So one other issue that I think is an absolute certainty for Hampden on Sunday is pyro. It sprung into the headlines on Friday. The SPFL, normally it's the SFA that do these sort of things, but for once, they've ignored the Billy Boys. It was heard again today at Dingwall. They've ignored that for years, but suddenly, on Friday morning, the SPFL, Neil Doncaster, swallowed some bravery pills, and three clubs have been charged for pyro use at the semi-finals. It seems like the delayed kickoffs was behind the decision to charge them. It also seems that the three clubs involved are quite happy with the charges because it will allow them to further their action. But there'll be 50,000 at Hampden. There will be pyro at Hampden on Sunday. It might be the last hurrah for some folk, but having been warned, and both managers spoke out against pyro on Friday afternoon, it's equally certain that there'll be some people at Hampden on Sunday with pyro. The minimum wage stewards aren't going to stop them. They'll be going in mob-handed, they'll be going in big gangs, and there'll be no TIFO, I suspect, because that sounds like a tit-for-tat thing. And the response will be pyro at Hampden on Sunday. So I know James has got a few views. I listened into a radio. I never had the good fortune of listening to Tom English and Michael Stewart on it, but James apparently listened to it. And I'll pass over to you for your take on that debate, conversation, and your own views on pyro.
All my views on pyro were well known. This stuff shouldn't be anywhere near stadiums, and I was absolutely aghast listening to Michael Stewart. And I think that Michael Stewart is one of the most intelligent people in the Scottish media, and he sounded like I don't even know what. I was aghast listening to him. He's talking some of the most arrant nonsense about this subject, talking about safe pyro, talking about clubs working with the fans, talking about the association has to help, you know, create a safe environment for this stuff. You're like, Jesus Christ, every single goddamn safety expert who's been consulted on this has said there is no such thing as safe pyro, does not exist. There is no safe way to do this. And even if there were, it's against the law. So what exactly does Michael Stewart want the clubs to work with people on? I don't know. Tom English was equally aghast. He was shocked at what he was listening to. And he kept on saying to him, like, this is illegal. Like, what part of this do you not get? This isn't allowed. Clubs aren't allowed to work with fans on this. It's against the law. I mean, I looked into this a couple of weeks ago the Zagreb story about the Zagreb searches. Zagreb are going to strip search our fans on Tuesday night, apparently. Apparently they did it to Dortmund fans and found plenty of stuff. The Zagreb security chief said, "We found pyro in places where you couldn't believe that pyro could be hidden." I don't even want to think about where they are, by the way. Right. So he's justified the action that they've already taken and the action that they're going to take. And I wrote a piece on it and basically said, look, you know, that strip searches will not be coming to Scottish grounds anytime soon, right? But the measures are going to get more draconian and more extreme in order to keep this stuff out of stadiums. If the authorities want to do this, if they have got the will to do it, they will do it. They'll find a way to do it. You know all these people that say it's here to stay and all that? Garbage. No way. If the authorities want to stamp this out, they will do it. But it's the measures they make need to take in order to do it that we should all be a bit worried about. So I looked into something while I was writing that. I wanted to know exactly, I know the Scottish Parliament voted in a new law, but I wanted to know what the actual vote count was. And there was not a single vote in favour, not a single vote against the new legislation, not one. So this whole idea of working with the clubs working with fans and that is a non-starter. You could not get a single vote for this in Parliament. Not one. Not from any party, not from any politician. No one supports it. No one in a position to do something about it supports it. And the new law that's been brought in means that if you get caught trying to bring this stuff into a stadium, you can get a £5,000 fine and a 6-month jail sentence. And the first person who gets a sentence like that, that's going to send shockwaves through the support. And that will clarify some thinking. That will crystallize some minds.
James, have you had a shockwave with your lighting?
My camera has gone out, I think.
No, you're still there. Right, you're just a bit different.
Am I still? You can still see me?
You're still visible and audible.
That's good. We can carry on. I'm good. I can't see you guys anymore, but I'm good.
I'll pass over to Eric to try and follow up on that. Those fairly direct thoughts from James on pyro.
Look, to be honest, there's not much more I can add to that than what James has said. What I would say is that the we're at a point where the horse has already bolted the stable. This it's been going on for so long now, and then all of a sudden, as James has put it, there's going to be draconian measures brought in to stop it. And I suppose at the end of the day, if somebody gets arrested and somebody has pyro on them and they get fined 5K or a prison sentence, the ripple effect of that is going to be pretty self-explanatory, you know. So I don't know what way the clubs are going to deal with it. Look, from a spectator perspective and watching games on the television, pyro makes, you know, it makes for spectacular viewing, but it doesn't make for spectacular safety. You know what I mean? And I think this is the issue. It's ultimately safety that is what the issue is. And any governing body, if they want to enforce safety, will put in the most draconian laws that they possibly can to enforce that and to make sure that it happens. And as James has said, like, as much as clubs might have the will to work with fans or whatever the case, if there ever was a will there, if people are going to get arrested and people are going to get fined £5,000 for having her on them, it's going to come to a swift finish. That's the reality.
There's another horrible thing to consider, which I think might be why the SPFL finally moved on it. Having that law now come into effect, it's obvious that the Scottish Parliament is determined to deal with this issue in some way. And if football is incapable of policing this issue, they'll just take it out of football's hands. They'll introduce some person strict liability and we're off to the races. And they'll be punishing everything they can get away with. It'll be like the Offensive Behaviour of Football Act times 10. You won't be able to whisper an Irish song in the toilet with it, you know, point sanction.
So I think the question is going to be who blinks first.
Well, and long before, I always say that long before we get to a point where Celtic have to shut a stand, Celtic will just start tearing up people's or deleting people from the season ticket list. And we know who some of those people will be. Long before it gets to the point where a stand gets shot at Celtic Park. Celtic will not wait for that before they deal with us. They can't afford to anyway.
On that issue, once UEFA said there's going to be support and away fan ban, the pyro has effectively stopped at European matches. So
yes.
I think the message does get through. It's taken a few steps to reach that place. I don't know if the threats from the SPFL will be taken as seriously as the threats from UEFA. But there's bound to be more headlines and issues in the back of it following the game on Sunday.
Definitely.
Yep. Well, I think we've ran our course for this week. So
are we going to take a quick look over the fence?
Well,
all right.
They were in action today, and the manager at full time said that he thinks that this is the football that fans want to see. It certainly was the football I was wanting to see from them because they were, again, absolutely dire. They benefited from a deflected goal for the first one and one of the worst goalkeeping howls you will ever see for the second, and a late goal when Ross County had given up the ghost. They were not brilliant by any stretch of the imagination. And I hope the team they played today is the one that plays us next Sunday, because this time next week, we will all be very drunk and very happy.
My take across the fence, there was an absolutely fantastic article on the Daily Record website about the parallel universe, which Bears will be living under. So in this parallel universe, The Hammer Ross County, well done, one out of one. They then hammer Spurs on Tuesday, Spurs on Thursday, and they're singing the Loyal Bears are singing a football song, which is "You're Getting Sacked in the Morning" to Ange Postecoglou, the guy that inflicted untold misery on them. They were going for, they should be going for 58 or 59 this season, but Ange came along, put a stop to that. But they'll get some logic out of beating Spurs on the Thursday Cup, progress for them. And then on Sunday, of course, they'll win the, they'll retain the League Cup. Phil Clement will be the first ever Ibrox manager to retain a trophy. So that's a, the Daily Record put this as a parallel universe. But as all three of us know from following that fading Glasgow publisher, the Daily Record is constantly in a parallel universe. Certainly from 2012 and before that, they're in a parallel universe. So that was hard to beat. That I suggested was out of Fizz or Sunday Sport. So that's my take in matters across the fence. I think Eric must have something in mind, unless me and James have stolen it. So I'll pass to you for your
I haven't much else to comment on the game today. I think my view was pretty much the same as James, but I may be slightly concerned for Ange Postecoglou after his result against Chelsea today. I would hope that he gets to stay in place. Like, there's not no knee-jerk reaction at Tottenham, you know, after what happened today. And I hope he's in place for the game on Thursday to be able to inflict more misery on the Ibrox side. But who knows with the Ibrox this is the thing, like, you just don't know with them. There's like one side shows up for the Europa League and one side shows up for, again, kind of mince we saw today. So like, I hope that the parallel universe does not come to pass on Thursday evening next, put it that way. But I just hope that Ange, you know, can reassert himself at Tottenham on Thursday night and just continue on from there. That's what I'd hope anyway. So that's my thing pretty much for the
That's fine. I think that about does us for this week. So we're all fairly new to the podcasting thing, but apparently, yes, we want subscriptions. If you can click on the thumbs up to subscribe, click on likes, that all helps us, builds a little bit of momentum. You'll be able to get our podcasts on our own websites. That's Read Celtic, Video Celts, and the Celtic blog. You'll find it on YouTube, which seems to be the first port of call for most people looking for podcasts. We will be back unless something drastic happens.
Yes, and we're also available on Spotify and
we're in a parallel universe this time next week.
We're on Spotify. Can we be on a parallel universe, Eric? Have you got a timetable, a timescale for appearing in a parallel universe?
No. But we are. We're on Spotify now. We're on Apple Podcasts as well. So you can pick it up there too, just from listening from an audio perspective if you want to as well.
So we'll be back next week. We'll be recording on Monday at some stage, possibly published on Monday evening. And that'll be looking back on Dynamo Zagreb and the League Cup final. So, you'll get plenty of coverage all through the week, 24/7, almost every hour across the three websites. And we will be back again next week to reflect on two fairly important matches that will go a long way to shaping the season and hopefully a long way towards making it a very memorable and happy Christmas. So we'll leave it at that and we'll reconvene again next week, lads. Thanks for your time, James. Thanks for your time, Eric. Until next time, fingers crossed.
See you next time, guys, and everybody else.
Thank you.